Kevin, how are you?
Hey, Nick, how are you, man? Good morning.
Good morning to you. We are conversing with Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon here on the Eagle. Kevin, I got to ask you first. You have a residence in Tampa Bay, Florida, don't you?
Well, I have family down there. My wife's family, originally from Racine, Wisconsin, but they live up in a little north of you. They live up in the Spring Hill area.
Okay.
My brother-in-law, Billy, has kept the tradition of Guido's restaurant going. And if you want the greatest pizza that you've ever eaten in your life, it's worth driving a half an hour or so up to Spring Hill to Guido's restaurant. It is thin, crisp crust. It's the best. And my brother-in-law, Billy, is like the coolest guy in the world, and he's there every night. It's real old school, baby.
Cool. Love it. Kevin, I want you to walk us through the REO experience. And specifically, you guys came off a great double live album, then into the Tuna Fish album, which was really starting to break you bad and nationwide and really catapulted you guys. Then Nine Lives came around, and it did okay. My question is, when you guys jumped in to do High Infidelity, did you know that, like, okay, yeah, this is the album, guys. This is the one.
You know what? It's funny because of this 35th anniversary. I am being asked about this a lot, and when I think about it, when you're in the studio, every album you make, you're into it, man. You love the songs, and you have the highest of you're putting your heart and soul into everything you do in the studio, right? But you never have any clue what's going to happen once the record's released. Once it gets out there, then it's just a matter of whether it catches on or not. So, but I do remember that there was a sense of closeness among the band members because we had been working so hard touring. Our schedule was we'd be on tour, come home, take a week off, go in the studio, take a week off, go on the road. I mean, so our home lives were starting to kind of feel that pressure and starting to kind of fall apart, for lack of a better term. And so we were all kind of going through it at the same time. So there was this. So when your home life is falling apart, it made the band that became our family, and we were all going through it. We were all so close. So the songs we wrote, we didn't plan it this way, but there was a definite cohesive feeling in the songs. And so, there was definitely something. I felt it. I felt something in the air during the High Fidelity sessions. But, I mean, none of us could have ever, in our wildest dreams, imagined what would happen, 35 years ago now, when we were just, the record was just coming out. You're always excited, but I mean, it just, when Keep on Loving You came out and started, like, actually, getting on the charts, I mean, it was like, what? Wait, we actually have a hit single? That made absolutely no sense to us. I remember we played a gig in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I could see from my hotel room window across the parking lot to the arena we were playing. And back in those days, they would take like a 12,000 seat arena and hang a curtain across it because they figured that we would only sell 2,500, 3,000 tickets if we were lucky. And as the day went on, I saw this line forming around the arena, and we didn't know what was happening. We didn't know from the charts. We were just kids playing rock and roll, and by the time we got to the arena, there were 16,000 people in line around the whole place. They had they lost the curtain, man, and it was like that's when it hit us that something was going on. And luckily, just a couple of years ago, a person came into our meet and greet with two tickets to that concert.
Wow!
And wanted me to sign them, and I was like, I begged her. I'm like, honey, I'll sign yours, but can I have the other one? And she actually gave it to me, and it's framed, man, and it's right in my studio because I want to never lose track of that moment because that was just it was hey, our lives changed.
Infidelity done at? Where were they? Where did you guys record it?
Oh, well, the demos were done in a little hole in the ground studio in Hollywood called Crystal Sound, where you could still smell the puke from 1972 in that place. I mean, we just went in there. It was a hellhole. We went in there for 3 days to make demos, and it actually ended up that somewhere, I would say, at least half of the performances that you hear on the actual High Fidelity record were performances that from those demo tapes, because there was a soulfulness to what we did at Crystal that you couldn't capture it again. You know, there were live vocals, live guitar solos that we never could top. So a lot of it came from those sessions at Crystal in Hollywood.
We're talking to Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon. He's joining us to give you a reset here. Kevin, tell me about the CMT Crossroads experience for you.
Oh, man, are you kidding me? That was when I think of the perks of the success that really the High Fidelity record kind of catapulted us into another stratosphere, and so many amazing things have come from that, and one of them was the CMT Crossroads thing. You know, for those people who aren't familiar with it, what they do at Crossroads is they'll take a country artist and a rock artist, and you get together and you kind of, the country artist sings on the rock songs, the rock person sings on the country songs. They've had, John Mayer and Brad Paisley, things like that, where it's really a cool thing. I think Lindsey Buckingham did it with Little Big Town, and so we did it with Sarah Evans, and it was a ton of work, man, because I had to learn all her tunes, and I had to, figure out how to sing in her keys, So it was, and Sarah is just such a sweetheart, just a beautiful woman, and just a beautiful soul, and it was a gas. I mean, we're sitting there with a fiddle player playing on Roll with the Changes. I mean, how cool
wow.
is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That is an experience to behold, and I love the show. I really do. I mean, it's some of the pairings they put together are just so perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I think the greatest one ever was Sting and Vince Gill.
Yes,
and they told us as we were going to do it. Listen, if something goes awry, you can always stop and start over again, because we're taping this, and it'll be, no one who ever watches the show on TV will see it. You have to stop if somebody forgets a lyric, whatever. It's happened every single show. And then the producer kind of looked at each other and went, well, except for one. And of course, Vince Gill and Sting went top to bottom all the way through, and those are two of the great talents of our time. I saw Vince Gill in concert at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville a couple months ago, and he blew my mind. And I had another opportunity where I got to do for the Country Music Association a kind of a pass the guitar type thing, where five stools on stage, each of us with an acoustic guitar, and we each played a song and switched from person to person.
Wow.
It was Vince Gill, Eddie Lou Harris, Zach Brown, Sheryl Crow, and me.
How cool is that?
It was beyond cool, man. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Am I dreaming? Is this, is somebody pinch me, or is this, what did someone make a horrible mistake?
Yeah.
And I'm not really supposed to be here, but it was like, I played Music Man, our song Music Man, on acoustic guitar, and Vince Gill just jumped in and played a guitar solo. He probably never heard the song before, and he played this. I mean, I just kept going. I couldn't even start singing again.
Wow.
Because I was into what he was playing, but
Kevin,
the record has put me in a lot of places where without that record I would have never been, and it's to celebrate 35 years of that record, it's just as time goes by, I think I appreciate it more and more, you know, we play those songs in concert every night. You know, we'll play a place like the Ruth Beckert Auditorium, you know, and, you know, I'm sure you've been there.
Oh, yeah.
We play a lot of beautiful theaters now where the sound is perfect and, you know, people can really hear the music. And, you know, when we play the songs from High Infidelity, man, people lose their minds.
Oh, absolutely. Is there a song off that, Kevin? It seems like every band has, Springsteen has Born to Run. I know that I talked to Foreigner, I think it was Jukebox Hero. Is there one song off that album that generates just more craziness or more response than any other?
Well, on that record, there's really two, and it was the 1-2 punch of Keep on Loving You and Taking on the Run. Those two songs.
Yes.
You know, like, it's like we released Keep on Loving You first, and it literally was a number one single. It was pretty amazing, you know, which is pretty amazing for a bunch of knuckleheads from Illinois, you know.
Yeah.
And the record started taking off with Keep on Loving You, but when Taking on the Run came out, that was like the two of the 1-2 punch that just people just really, you know, they really connected with those songs. And so yeah, those two. You know, I have such a, I'm so connected to those songs, and I'm just really happy that I'm able to experience something that I always dreamed that someday I would experience, but never really expected to, and that was just to have songs like that just are in people's hearts and souls, and when you know, when I play those opening piano chords of Keep on Loving You, the place just goes crazy, and it's that's just a little song I woke up in the middle of the night and wrote. You know what I mean? I had no idea that it was gonna, you know, have the effect that it had on so many people, and it's humbling, and it's amazing, and I consider myself extremely fortunate to have that experience.
Much we appreciate your time, continued success, and we will catch up with you down the road.
Hey, Nick, thank you, brother. Bye-bye now.
See you.